My name's Tim. I'm the interim lead pastor. It's really good to be with you this morning. I just want us to take a moment to pray for what's going on in our nation, and specifically the tragedy in Texas. I want to be honest with you that I have not read extensively, and I find myself changing either the station or the screen when much comes up. Many of us in this room are parents, and we know what it's like to raise kids and get to that stage where you let them go for the first time to go to camp or to school or to an overnight or something like that. And the reality of what we feel and trust when we do that. And I can't even imagine what it's like to not have them return. And so I know that we're all aware and at different levels and of awareness and detail, but just wanted to take a moment just to pray and just to acknowledge that there are things that don't make sense, we unfortunately can't wrap our minds around and fully understand, that is part of our world that is both good and broken. And so I don't know if that's something that has impacted you, but just wanted for us to collectively just to take a moment to pause and to pray. And then we'll open up scripture together and continue in our series. So can we do that together? Can you just take a deep breath and close your eyes and God of all creation, God who sees, God who knows, our God who is all powerful, and who is righteous, we just acknowledge that when tragedy strikes and when we learn of this specific tragedy of the floods in Texas and the loss of life, particularly, that there are not our answers that we can hold on to or cobble together that answer everything for us. And so that we cry out to you and we just say, this doesn't make sense. This isn't good. Why did this happen? How did this happen? And we look for somebody to blame and somebody to provide explanation, and nothing satisfies in this moment. And so we just say again that we need you. We need you to remind us that you see, that you hear, that you know, that you are here, and that you are good. And God, we also ask and plead for those families, friends, communities that have lost loved ones. Would you show up in a real tangible way? Will you be the peace that surpasses understanding? Would those that know you respond in a way that reveals that they know you? And I can't imagine what that is or what that looks like, but we ask for that. And God, we also ask just for each of us in this room as we have conversations with maybe our own kids, maybe our friends, our neighbors, coworkers. Would you give us words that are beyond ourselves? Words of hope, words of peace, and would somehow we be able to be and to communicate good news in this season? We acknowledge that we want summer to be fun and restful and light and easy and enjoyable, and this doesn't fit any of those. Holy Spirit, we know that you are here and that you're working, and so even in this time right now as we're gathered in this room, would you do a work in us and through us? As we sing, as we pray, as we look to your word, we invite you to work and move right now. And Jesus, we proclaim you as King, as risen, as our Redeemer, as the one who forgives and walks with us in this life now. Would you speak to us right now? Would we hear from you? It's in your name that we pray. Amen. I want to start with having you clap for someone, and they don't know I'm going to do this, and it's going to be awkward for them, and I'm perfectly fine with that. But would you, 2 weeks ago, Jason, who leads with Emily, his wife, our youth ministry, who they've led together for this past year. And then he did something that he's not done here before, which he opened up scripture for us on Sunday and just did a great job leading us through Psalm 23. So can we give him a hand for leading us? So. I'm probably going to come hug you afterwards, Jason, so you can punch me then when nobody sees. It's real close, and you can just, yeah. No, really appreciate just the work and time you put in, and yeah, was blessed by it, so thank you. We're in a series on Psalms that we've called Soundtrack for a Flourishing Life, and the reason we can call it this is that the book of Psalm, which if you just go like this with your Bibles, as you know, you typically, there you go, Psalm 119, longest book in the Bible. Psalms is right in the middle, and it's this collection of poems and songs that were written, many by David, many by others, and it's put all together, and it really hits on every human experience that can be experienced. And so the highs, the lows, the confusion, the tension, everywhere in between. So there's something for everything that we've experienced in the book of Psalms. That's Scripture's promise to us, and it's true as we look in the book of Psalms. And so we're just saying, we're picking about nine throughout this summer that we're looking at. We looked at Psalm 1 a few weeks ago, Psalm 23 two weeks ago. And the one we're going to look at today is also written by David. And it is advice and modeling from David for us when we are not having a great week. And I don't mean like tragedy, okay? We just prayed through a situation that is tragic. This psalm that we're going to look at today is when we're having a bad week and we've been embarrassed. When somebody has done or said something to us that has humiliated us. And that could be as light as a joke that we didn't appreciate, or it could be something as sinister as manipulating others to view us in a new way that actually costs us something. It could cost us a promotion. It could cost us some friends. It could cost us something in our reputation. But when other people talk about us and even lie about us and it humiliates or embarrasses us, or when somebody else is working against us and they just don't like us and nothing changes that and we just find ourselves absolutely exacerbated that we just cannot move forward with another person or another group or in a certain situation. And there's this ongoing, just keeps going, that we just can't see a way through, and it's frustrating. And it begins to get us down and cost us that life just doesn't work and everything feels heavier than it should, and it just is a burden. And we go through this struggle of frustration that even leads maybe to gloom of this isn't going to improve. David is experiencing that, and he's writing a song that's meant to be sung and recited. And as we know, songs help shape us and form us and affect our feelings. And he's saying, I'm going to write this, and it's going to be put to music, and when it's played back, it's going to help me and others know how to get through these situations where we're embarrassed, humiliated, exacerbated, frustrated, gloomy. So we're going to look through this, and it's just eight verses. It's kind of short. So I want to read through it, and then we're just going to kind of walk through it and see what it is that David recommends for us. And he does this thing, as we'll see. He talks kind of in four directions. Well, it's three directions, but one he repeats. He talks to God first. He writes the song, and he begins talking to God. And then he talks to the people he is having a hard time with. He talks to them. Then he talks to himself, and then he ends by talking to God again. So he talks to God, the people he doesn't like, that he's having a hard time with, then he has words for himself, and then he ends by talking to God again. So it's Psalm chapter 4, it's eight verses. Psalm chapter 4 says this, "Answer me when I call to you, my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. How long will you people turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart his faithful servant for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Tremble and do not sin. When you are on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. Offer the sacrifices of the righteous and trust in the Lord. Many, Lord, are asking, who will bring us prosperity? Let the light of your face shine on us. Fill my heart with joy. when their grain and new wine abound. In peace I will lie down and sleep. For you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. Hopefully, even just reading it through, you get a little bit of a feel of this rise in David and then this, like, kind of calm and settledness at the end of it, just in these few short verses. But he starts pretty intense. And again, he talks to God, then he talks to those he doesn't like. He talks to himself. He has some words for himself, and then he ends with this kind of settled peace, joy with God. And again, it's a song that's sung over him, that it's repeated. It's meant for other people as well. He starts pretty aggressively, though. I mean, he starts with, answer me. And he's talking to God, right? So there's this sense of force or passion. Answer me when I call to you. He's talking to God. He's very familiar with God. He's walked with God for years. And yet there's almost like this, you know, in my mind, I have this sense of he's like shouting and trying to get God's attention. Answer me when I call to you, my righteous God. So I'm acknowledging that you're my righteous God, but I'm also kind of snapping at you a little bit. Give me relief from my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. This is how he starts out talking to God. And as he does this, there's this parallel that comes to mind when he's doing this. He says to God, answer me when I call to you. Like, I don't know how you are walking with God in this season, but have you given God many orders? Like David is giving God an order. Answer me when I call to you. My righteous God, you're still God. But hey, I'm giving you an order, respond to me. Relieve me from my distress and have mercy on me. He's telling God to do something, and it doesn't, here's the picture that I get in my mind. Many of us are parents. I think most of us have had this experience with a young child. We're trying to do something new to them. Maybe they're sitting at a table. This is the picture I have in my mind. They're sitting at the table, and they're trying to do something new for the first time. Maybe write something, maybe it's a puzzle of some sort, maybe it's some kind of game they're trying to figure out, maybe it's a project of some sort, and maybe you and your spouse maybe are there, maybe older siblings are there, and you're kind of all at the table, and they're trying to do something for the first time, and they start into it, and they're going, but then they get frustrated, and they can't quite figure it out, and you know, you try to help, and they push your hand aside, and they're trying to do it, right? And you're kind of talking to them, and you're helping them, and they're not listening. They're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. And then eventually, a couple things may happen. One is they just go, and they just push it away, right? Another thing that happens, and this happened with all three of my boys, is that they get to this place where they can't move forward, and what do they say? Help me! Help me! And the older people, the parents, sitting there, look at each other and go, we have been, we are, we're trying to. The child, say, 5, 6, 7 years old, is in their own world, and they're trying to do it. And they're not even aware of the outside help that's being offered, the words, the comments, the hands to help guide, the do this, push this button, write it this way, hold it this way, try this, look at it this way. And they just go, help me. This is what David is doing. And the reason that we know that is that, and you don't see it necessarily in the English, but the words and the phrases of this particular verse are all phrased in the past tense. So while we read it and we hear him say, God, answer me right now. Help me in my distress. What he's actually saying is, you've answered me before. You've helped me in my distress before. Now do it again. This is what I need again. But I can see that you've done it. As a parent, when I'm sitting with my child and they get to that frustration point where they say, help me! We all respond differently, right? Like, as a young parent, I would say something, and this is probably shocking, but just kind of a little smart. Sarcastic. Like, duh. Like, what have I been doing? Like, And these thoughts would run through my mind, and this is not what runs through God's mind, just to be really clear about this. But the thoughts that run through my mind as a young parent is like, who carried you home from the hospital? Who's been changing your diapers for multiple years? Who has literally been taking food and sustenance and placing it into your body? I have sustained you and kept you alive and now get to this point and I'm trying to help you and tell you what to do. And you snap at me and say, help me. The best days, I would be able to just respond graciously and go, oh, sure, I would like to help you. What would you need? Well, this part. Okay, great, here you go. This is what David is doing. David is living in both sides of his brain right now. He's living in both sides of this emotional tension of like, God, don't you see what I'm experiencing? And we're going to get to what he's experiencing in the next verse. But he says, help me right now. Answer me and relieve me from my distress. And what the phrase literally means is, I'm bound up and I'm boxed in and I am stuck and I need some room. Push the walls back. It literally means to give me space. Help me in my distress means when I'm in distress, I am boxed in and I've got nowhere to go. I'm going through this experience. I have reached this point in relationships with coworkers that I cannot see a way through. This is not going to work. Other people are now talking about me and affecting my reputation and my future and my experience right now, and I cannot get through. Give me some space. Let me see another route through. We had I think 7 or 8 years ago, which is crazy that it's been that long. But Abby and I, in just about every area of our life, we're having a really hard time. Our marriage, our finances, professionally, parenting might have actually been the what was going the best at that time. But it was just one of those seasons where we looked around and it was like from every side it felt like we were getting hit and struggling. And I don't know if you've ever done one of those stress and anxiety tests that is like, it's just a list of things and there's a score for each one. And you go through and if you check them off if you've had them experienced in your life. The big ones are a death of a family member, divorce, birth, and a significant change financially. Those are all stressors, and it could be up or down. Those are not necessarily bad things, right? They just add stress. So it could be a loss of finances or a significant gain in finance, but a significant change in finances brings stress. Adding a child brings stress. A divorce, obviously, stress. Death, stress, loss, hurt, pain, anxiety, all of it. So there's those things you click through like that, and there's like 100 of them on the list, and then they all have a kind of different value system, and you add them up, and then it's like, bloop, 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 bloop. You're about to have a nervous breakdown, like that kind of thing. Or like, oh, hey, lucky you, great, easy year for you. Like, worst thing that happened is your team didn't win the NBA Finals. Like, whoa, like, you know, so it's different ranks and, you know, you look, and that year for us, it was like, I mean, we didn't get divorced, but we didn't add a child, but we had so many things that were going poorly and struggling and just difficult. And I had this experience, and I didn't think of it in this way, but as I look back, it definitely felt like it, like the walls were closing in. My options for a way forward, or even my options for, hey, can today just feel good? We're getting closed in and closed in and closed in. And my day off at the time was Friday, and Abby was gone at work and the kids were gone at school. And I was sitting on the couch and kind of going through my morning routine and praying. And we all pray differently, I'm sure. I just felt prompted. I'm not going to pray sitting right now. I'm going to pray kneeling and see if that works, God, because everything is not going well. And so I got off the couch and turned around and kneeled down and prayed. And the thing that was really on my mind and heart at that moment was money. It was like, good gosh, it might have been as something as dumb as like I got another traffic ticket and was like, where am I going to get that from? And you know, this thing we're paying for and this thing and we've got to do for this. There's like medical bills that came up and there's, I mean, all these different things. And I was like, God, I don't know how we're going to cover the bills for the next few months. And that was part of my prayer. Got up and sat back on the couch and I think I was reading or something and just picked up the book I was reading and started time of reading. And it was 20 minutes later that my mom calls. And I just need to tell you too, my mom listens. She'll listen to Missio podcasts now because I'm here. So she loves you. So she's going to hear this probably. So we might need to edit this out. But I have to discern if I'm going to pick up my mom's call on my day off. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Can you edit that out? Love you, Mom. So she calls, and I decide I'm going to answer it and talk to her. And she said, chit-chat, and how you doing, da-da-da-da-da. And she said, hey, Dad and I have something we want to tell you. We know that life has kind of been hard these last few months. We have an amount of money that we want to give you. And it was like, what? Like, it was I'm like looking around, like, are there cameras in the house? Like, is this, like, this is 20 minutes. This is, like, as a pastor, these are the kind of stories that I hear from other people. Like, I get to experience this. Like, we need some help financially. And out of the blue, which it's not something my parents had ever done before. It was a first time thing. And I was just absolutely in shock. And what it did was it took the walls that were about this close in, and it just kind of moved them back about this far. And I was able to go, that doesn't solve all of our problems, but it tells me that God actually hears me, for one. It tells me that he sees. It tells me that he's gonna walk with me through it. He's not like, here's $100,000 and all your problems are solved. It was, here's a little bit of breathing room for the next 4 to 8 weeks. And it was, okay, God's in this with me. I can take the next step. I can breathe a little bit. I can move out. I've got a little bit of space. David is saying, push the walls back just a little bit. God, let me know that you are here and give me some space to breathe again, because everything is feeling so closed in and I don't have any space to move. And so I need you. I need your mercy. Will you hear my prayer? David is at the end of his rope. And again, this isn't like tragic crisis moment for him. He doesn't have a guy following him. He has other psalms that talk about when somebody's about to kill him, literally. This is not one of those. This is just a really bad week where he's humiliated and he doesn't see a way forward. And he cries out to God. And what he's doing is he's reorienting himself. In the midst of all the things that are going on, I need to reorient myself. And he looks and he says, God, you are the one that can answer me. So what we read is him snapping at God, answer me, is actually him saying with confidence, I know you're the God that can answer me. I might not feel it, but I know that you're the God that answers me. I know that you're the God that hears me. I know that you're the God that sees me, that you're righteous, that you can give me space, that you're the one that can have mercy on me and respond. The first thing that David does, the first thing that we're to do, when we realize, like, we don't see a way through this, we're at the end of our rope, is to reorient and go, okay, who is God? Is he aware of this? Is he still good? Does he see me? Because when we're in those moments where we don't have any space, that usually is not part of our grid, of our understanding, of our baseline. And so the first thing that David does is reset the baseline. This is who God is. So he talks to God first, then he talks to those that are against him, and he says this in verse 2, how long will you people turn my glory into shame? They're ruining his reputation, they're talking about him, but they're lying about him in the next. It says, how long will you love delusions and seek false gods? They're lying about him, the things that are not true, delusions and false gods. And so he just says, hey, there are, so again, he's writing a song, and again, this is like, how much of music today is this? Like, we're just talking to somebody else, like, we might want them to love us. We might want to embarrass them. We might want to tell them how dumb they are. We might want to tell them how great somebody else is. But much of music today is talking to other people. David is talking to the people that are against him. Not that they would ever hear it necessarily, but it's for his own good. And he's saying, they are lying about me. How long is this going to go on? But what else is he doing? He's reorienting to what is true. He knows that they're lying about him. And so he's telling himself, these things aren't true. We get caught up so often in going, like, is that really true of me? And one of the greatest kind of pieces of advice that my mentor gave me early on was, he said, one sign of maturity in Jesus is being willing to hear truth regardless of the source. I still don't like that. That is so true. Somebody who is against us, who lies, who we know is not out for our good, who maybe doesn't even really truly know us, God can actually still use that source as truth for us. We can actually receive that. Now, that doesn't mean we become best friends. That doesn't mean we go and have some kind of powwow and get close with them. It just says, God, you've delivered through that. David's already asked that question. Is there anything true that's coming from my enemies in this that I need to hear? And he's assessed and he says, nope, that is all delusional and it's lies. And so they're telling lies that are getting traction out in the world and it's costing me. But then he says this other things. He says, they seek false gods. They seek false gods. Okay? One of the things that David is asking for from God is that God sees him. One of the things that is very hard for us when we've been harmed by another is that we actually are able to see them. And this isn't like all positive and warm and fuzzy, but David actually takes some time to see them. And he says, these men are against me and they're lying about me. I'm going to take a deep breath and pause and realize they actually, and this sounds harsh, they're living without hope. They're believing delusions and they are seeking false gods. So they're actually living the kind of life that is putting all of their chips and all of their hope and all of their future in something that is a figment of their own imagination, is in something that is not true. And so David has just reoriented himself to the God of the universe who is real and true and faithful to him and has a track record of showing up and giving him space in the past. And he's saying, they don't have that. Now, I don't like them. If I could, I would like to kick them or shoot them or transfer them or move them on or cause them havoc. I would like to do all those things to them. But I'm going to take a moment and see them and go, they actually are living a life that I don't want any part of. I am glad I'm not on that road. God, I am glad I have you. And I actually want them to have you, but they're not. They're seeking false gods. And then the very next verse, look at what he says. And again, in his song, he's talking to them. They may never hear it, but he says, know that the Lord has set apart his faithful servant for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. He just reminds himself. He says, I'm looking at them and they're against me. And there's a lot in my own kind of humanness, that part of me that isn't connected to you right now, God. There's part of me that still wants to cause them harm, but they're doing enough harm to themselves. And he says, your faithful servant is the one that you've chosen. God, you've chosen me. God, you. And what he means in this is that he has set apart his faithful servant for himself. Set apart means holy. Set apart means chosen. Set apart means precious. Set apart means unique, seen, known. David is saying, God, you've set me apart as your faithful servant. But then the last part of that sentence is for yourself, for himself. We stop often before we hear that last two words. God, you've set me apart. And this is true, but it's not the full or most important picture. What is true is that you've set me apart to live a different kind of life. When we hear set apart, we hear holy. For most of us, not all of us, for most of us, the initial thing that comes into our mind is, I'm supposed to live in this kind of way. I'm supposed to be this kind of person. David skips right on by that. And he says, God, you've chosen me. Why? To be with you. This is a relational statement. This is the God who you don't see, who you don't know because you're seeking false gods. The God who is real has chosen me for himself. He has set me apart for himself. He wants to be with me. He wants to know me. He sees me. He hears me when I call to him. David, again, is reorienting to what is true. Those are lies. Those are people that are without you. You've chosen me. You want to be with me. You've chosen me for yourself. I'm to be with you. And then he goes on. And there's some debate on these next two verses on whether David is talking still to other guys or if he's talking to himself. So it can be both. There's certainly part of it that is to himself, but part of it could have been for them too. Verse 4 says this, tremble and do not sin. When you are on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. offer the sacrifices of the righteous and trust in God. Tremble is just another word for saying angry. If you can picture being so angry that you're like, that's what it has in mind. He says, so he's talking to himself probably here, and he's like, when you begin thinking about them, when you begin thinking about what's going on in your life, when you begin scrolling through the wrongs that were done to you this week and the injustice that you're living in and the things that are not right and are not good and that you wish weren't happening, and you start getting ramped up and your blood begins to boil. Some of you are looking at me like you have no idea what I'm talking about. I know you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. When you lay on your bed at night and you have a hard time going to sleep, because what's scrolling through your mind is all the ways that you've paid a price that you shouldn't have had to pay, when somebody else has done you wrong and they've spoken poorly about you, and you're trying to backtrack and go, how did you even come up with doing that? And why did that happen? And how can I get you back? And how can I avoid that happening again? And what's going on? All those thoughts begin to stream. And then you start to get angry. And then you realize, my anger is what's keeping me awake and I can't sleep. Now I'm angry that I can't sleep. You know, it just adds and adds and adds. David is talking to himself and he's saying, there's a way out of this. Do not sin, which takes us, you know, there's Ephesians 4, I think it's 4:26, that says, in your anger, do not sin. Okay, we can be angry and not sin. So he's like, okay, first of all, I can sit here and think about these things and I can feel anger and that's not sin. So it's good. But when I start strategizing and planning, when I start holding on to this because it gives me fuel, we're probably moving into some sin area here. And so David is saying, you can acknowledge what's been done wrong and the pain, but you can do that without sinning. But even more than that, search your hearts and be silent. It's another way of saying, reflect on, self-assess. Here's what he's doing here. He's coaching himself. He's guiding himself and us. One of the things that keeps us in this place where we feel like the walls are closing in is we focus on what others have done to us. And David is saying, now you've already talked to them. Now we're going to shift and we're going to talk to ourselves and we're going to think about our own selves. So this is a silent assessment of our hearts and our minds where we're meditating on who we are and who God's called us to be. And it's this honest assessment that leads often to confession. God, I confess that I've played this role in it. I've confessed that my emotions have not been surrendered to you. I confess that I've fueled my own motivation by pouring over what's been done to me and hang on to that over and over and over again. I've even walked through when somebody's apologized to me, I've not really forgiven them or let them off the hook. I've held on to that. It's this searching and assessing our own lives. And so David turns his view on himself and says, I'm going to lay in my bed and be silent. But then he adds on to that and he says, offer sacrifices of the righteous and trust in the Lord. And so one of the things that he does is says, I'm going to call myself and call us to continue to step forward and walk forward in the practices that we know that unite us with Jesus, in the rhythms and the habits of our life that keep us aligned with Jesus. And here's one of the things, and it doesn't say it here in the text, but let's play this out. When we are struggling, when the walls are closing in, when we are humiliated, when we are in a place of disappointment and gloom, we often begin to step back from the regular habits that we have that keep us connected to community, that keep us connected to Jesus, and we begin to disengage and we begin to back away and we say, when I feel right and good again, I'll step back in. And David is saying, no. It's in the midst of those moments where you keep doing what you've been doing. Because God is the righteous and faithful one, and he sees you and hears you, even if you don't feel it, even if your emotions aren't there to match it, to stay in it and keep doing it. Why? Because it's an active, engaged way of trusting God, even when we don't have all the answers yet. Of trusting God and staying with him. And he says, and again, we're not going to start sacrificing here. We know that, like in what he meant there. He says, offer sacrifices of the righteous. So there's, you know, blood and killing and animals and bulls and oxes and all that kind of stuff. But This is just talking about what are the rhythms and the habits and the practices that when the best week happens, where you feel the most connected with Jesus, that you look at and you go, those are great. But when you're struggling, you're like, I'm not sure those are very good. And he says, no, treat them the same, regardless of your emotion and your feeling and an assessment of how your week is going. Because this actually is a way for you to tangibly trust in God, even when you don't feel like it. And so it's one of the pointers that he says, when you're experiencing these kinds of trials in your life, stay in the rhythm that was good for you in the good times, because God's going to work through it even in the difficult times. And then he switches and he talks to God again and he says this, many, Lord, are asking, will you bring us prosperity? Let the light of your face shine on us. Fill my heart with joy when their grain and wine abound. Okay? He's talked to God. He's talked to the other guys. He's talked to himself. And now he ends by talking to God again. And when he does that, he just acknowledges again, like, God, there is this inner cynic when times are tough that just gets very active in me. My inner cynic begins to look at all the things that aren't right. And God, there are others that are saying, who will bring us prosperity? Everybody's asking that, right? I mean, David's not asking it for himself. He's looking at other people right now, and he's saying, other people are asking, who will bring prosperity? And David is just acknowledging that. God, others are asking this. And then he moves to, let you be my prosperity. God, will you be my prosperity? Because one of the things that gets me off track is when I start asking that question unconnected to you. When I start asking, God, when are the good things going to happen in my life? And I become consumed with those, what those are. And I can scroll for hours and hours and hours and hours. Can you do that? This looks good. I want this. I'm pretty sure I need this. If they have it, I've got to have it. And he actually goes on and says, when somebody else's grain and wine abound, will you keep me connected to you? Let me translate that. When somebody else has a better summer vacation than me, when somebody has another car, I don't know, vacation home, people have those, I hear. Clothes. Body. Health. Behavior of kids. Some of those are really good things, right? When I look at others and I see others, whether it's right here or if it's here, and all of a sudden the things in me begin to calculate what I don't have. Let the light of your face shine on us. Fill my heart with joy when others have good lives. What would that be like? What would it be like if we were the kind of people that when somebody else got some kind of goodness or blessing or abundance in their life, that we went, yay! And it wasn't really hard to say that. And could we even do that when it was somebody that did something that cost us, that frustrated us, that caused us disappointment? Because we saw in them, you don't even know the God that I know, and I want you to know him. And if the best thing that happens in your life is a wonderful vacation, that's great. And I hope you come to know Jesus. But I want to be working and surrendering to the God of the universe. And so, God, would my joy come from your face? We talked about this a number of months ago. But the experience of joy, and this is from a couple of men who are, I think they refer to themselves as neuro theologians. Which isn't a thing, they made that up, but studying the brain and familiar with theology and saying, to the best of our understanding of both those things, what joy truly is when somebody else's face lights up when they see mine. I did start, you know, studying from infants when they begin to recognize face and you smile and they light up. But it even happens now for us, right, as adults. When somebody else lights up when they see, when somebody just spontaneously says, oh, so good to see you. That's a God-created ability to feel and to know joy. And that is why over and over it talks about God's face shining on us. In Numbers chapter something, Numbers 6, 24 to 26. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. They're out in the desert. They've been freed from slavery in Egypt, and they're going through the desert, and they're getting to the promised land. And here's all this talk about the God of the universe face shining upon you. He's saying, God, I'm with you. I'm not the God who stays distant and hopes you behave in a certain way. I'm the God who chooses you to be with you in relationship. I'm the God who wants you to know that my face is smiling upon you, and I am with you, and I hear you, and I respond. And so David is saying, everything around me is closing in, and I feel no space. And so I need to reorient myself to what is true of who God is and what's really going on, because I can get so consumed with defining my world and my experience through comparison with others, and even my own assessment, my own limited assessment of my own experience. So God, would you widen my perspective? Would you cause your face, would my joy actually come from you instead of trying to grasp for it in all these other ways? In peace, I will lie down. In peace, verse 8, in peace, I will lie down and actually sleep. I'll stop calculating, trembling with anger, being furious and ratcheting up. I'll be able to lie down and sleep. For you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. That's not some throwaway line like God keeps us safe. What he's actually saying there is when I'm aligned to you, and not alone in the sense of like I don't have other things going on in my life, but alone in the sense of you sit on top of everything. You sit in the first place. When I dwell with you at the top, then whatever is going on around me, I'm safe. Now, safety does not mean comfortable, good. It doesn't even mean prosperous in the way that the world measures it. It means safe, that God is with us, that we're good. And so whether the walls are all the way here or whether he's given us a little space so that we can breathe a little better, David is still claiming, if you're in the first top priority in my life, if you are my God and King, then I'm safe. That's what he means there. He knows his circumstances aren't necessarily going to change after he sings this song. But he's reoriented himself. He's claimed what is true. He's reflected on his own heart. And he says, God, because I'm with you, I'm still able to feel this capacity that you've created me for, to feel joy. And I want that. Because without that, I'm going to continue just to assess this world in the world's terms. And that's an entirely different path. One of the ways that we actually practice sensing, feeling, can I even say this, tasting God smiling on us is by coming to this table in front of us. On a weekly basis, we come back here. Sometimes we feel it and it's really good, and other times we kind of have to discipline ourselves to walk through it and to be reminded that the God of the universe sees us and loves us so much he sent his son. And so we take a cracker and we take some juice representing Jesus Christ's body broken, his blood shed for us, and go, God, you see us. You know that we need you. And so I invite you to do that now. We're going to continue to sing. Would you pray with me as we come to this table? Jesus, we need you. We love you. Spirit, would you help us to reorient what is true and real on a regular basis, because we so quickly and so easily can get it all twisted up. Some of us in this room right now are we're doing really well and we're walking with you, and we actually have a sense of peace. So we're grateful for that. And others of us are confused and struggling and are in that place of maybe we've actually experienced humiliation or struggle, disappointment. And so, God, would you meet us in this moment right now as we sing and come to your table? Would we actually have a sense of a little more room, a little more space, that you've moved us out of the tight and closed-in place and moved us a little more into the open, because we've been reminded and are more oriented around who you are, your faithfulness and your goodness for us.